Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
And you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden this week. I'm Frances Nesbitt and I'm here as always with Mags Morrissey. We're live today, Friday, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. We'd love to hear from you, so feel free to send us any questions or comments that you might have. You can get in touch with the show by text to 086 353 7782 or by phone on 776 2777 or email thekitchengarden@crkc.ie. If you're listening to the repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, don't bother texting us, as we won't get your message, but you can still email us at the show. Today on the show, we'll be talking about plans for the new year, a calendar of gardens in flower. Shortly, we'll be talking to Leah Leendertz, author of The Almanac, a seasonal guide to 2018, a gorgeous, gorgeous book. Really looking forward to talking to Leah. And we'll be joined later in the studio by Shan Quill, a writer for Stage and Screen, to talk to her about her work, but also her life as a vegetarian. Mags, how are you? How was your week?
My week was good.
Excellent.
Welcome back. It's good to have you back.
Oh, thanks very much. Yeah, sorry I wasn't here last week. A bit under the weather. All set? Are your New Year's resolutions still intact?
I have had one and I've actually stuck to it so far. So I'm quite pleased with myself.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Very good. Did it involve food?
It wasn't a big plan.
No, okay.
Yeah, but I think one thing at a time.
Very good. Very good. And was it outside or inside, or are you allowed to tell us? Are you afraid to tell us in case it kind of ruins it?
I think I might leave it for a little. If I got 3 weeks out of it, then I might talk about it. Otherwise, I'll feel under pressure.
I did notice on Twitter earlier on people putting up those kind of posts whereby it's the first Friday of the new year. It's time to take a break from the New Year's resolutions.
I haven't, though, actually.
Well done.
So, what day? Today's the 5th, is it?
Today's the 5th.
Wow, 5 days of New Year. Yeah.
Oh, you even started on New Year's Day?
Close.
Wow.
Close.
So four days, maybe.
I say 4 days, yeah. Right, when we get into the details. But but I do have some plans for the garden, actually.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I haven't got plans for the kitchen yet. I actually still feel a bit sort of cooked out of it over Christmas. So, but garden plans, yeah. I want to just tidy up my veg patch. I've been making progress over the last few years, but I want to put another kind of divide it up, so there's smaller compartments and stuff, so put another hedge in. So I'm going to put a hedge. I was thinking about willow, but you might have some words on that for me. So to break up the orchard from where the vegetables and the raspberries are, so put in a hedge there and then perhaps put a hedge at the front. This is because my garden is turning into a no-dig garden.
Very good.
I won't need to get a rotavator in. That's the plan.
One of the books that I want to spend a bit of time talking about this year is the No Dig Organic Home and Garden by Charles Dowding. Mm. And his No Dig method sounds really interesting to me. I've never done it, but an awful lot of advocates for it online.
There's a lot of advocates for it, and it makes kind of sense if you think about
it. Really does.
How everything else grows without being dug, and things grow in the wild perfectly well and in woodland and everything. So it does make sense, and it does cut down a lot of work as well. So you're working on more of the growing than on the preparing or on the controlling, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So that's my plan for this year.
I'd like to give that a shot as well. It does seem to need an awful lot of compost, though, so you need to have access to a huge amount of compost from what I've read. So
yes,
that's something we might need to think about. But I do like the fact that it also sounds a bit easier than digging.
Yeah.
Like just effort.
And you'll still have to do a little bit of weeding, really.
Yeah.
But that can be quite therapeutic at times, so... but I think it'd be nice that you were concentrating on actually growing the veg. Like I spent in the last couple of years most of my time just kind of fending off the weeds from the veg. So
this time of the year, I think, is a perfect time for planning and stuff in the garden. And you start to get so optimistic as the evenings get a bit longer and the plans start to take shape and you're looking at the garden, you're dying to get stuck in. It's always so full of hope, I think. You know, things are going to be great. This year will be the year that you crack it. And I love kind of making out the lists of seeds that I need, and I've started to pull together some orders now, and I'll be getting onto Irish Seed Savers and down to Mads McKeever down in Cork, and for the various types of chili. It's a lovely time of the year, actually, to be thinking about the garden.
And you can kind of be dreaming now as well. Mm-hmm. I'm doing more of the dreaming than the actual... probably planning of it, but and that is a nice. That's nice to be doing at this time of the year.
Mm. A great time of the year as well to be doing a bit of tidy outside as well. So most of the leaves have kind of gone by now, but there are, you know, there's been some storms over the winter, so there's probably a few bits and pieces around the place. Good time of the year for a bonfire. I believe you have one of those planned.
Bonfire tomorrow, yes.
Very good. Excellent.
Christmas trees.
And Christmas trees. So, yeah, a lot of people will be taking them down now today and tomorrow.
And yeah, it's time to have them down. I think everyone is kind of, we've done Christmas now. I think everyone here will agree that it's time to move on into New Year. So I took mine down this morning, actually.
And you will put yours on the bonfire out in the garden, but most people, they're advised to take it to the recycling
centre. Yeah, and there's centres all over in Kilkenny. The County Council run the recycling centres.
The details for the ones in the city are out in Dunmore, at the tip at Dunmore, and that'll be open from the 5th until the 15th. And it's open every day, Monday to Friday, from 8 until 4:30, and then Saturday from 8 to 12, and it's closed Sundays. And people really are encouraged to kind of bring their tree along there. They get chipped, and the chippings get used, apparently, yep. Rather than just dumping it somewhere.
Absolutely.
And that's the real Christmas trees. I'll take off all the branches on mine and I'll burn them in the stove in the house because I love the smell. It's a phenomenal smell.
We've done that in the past, actually. That is a nice thing to do.
It's gorgeous.
Not this year, but yeah.
And when the kids were smaller, I used to peel off little tiny bits of the branches and let them throw them into the fire, and it makes that crackling kind of fire, fireworks.
Especially if they've been in a warm. And I was thinking my Christmas tree was in the warmest room in the house, so by today it looked pretty, pretty
combustible.
I think if you just brought a match close to it, actually, it would have gone on fire. So, but they do, when you put them into the stove and what, they do give a great flame and a big burst of.
Now, one of the things that I know is close to your heart, and you'll probably be doing it before you get your bonfire going tomorrow, is having a check underneath the pile of timber, just in case anything is living underneath
your hedgehogs.
Your hedgehogs, yes.
I haven't seen a hedgehog for a couple of weeks, actually. So, but they do, you know, some of them, they won't all hibernate, so they are scurrying around somewhere. But then again, I think this time of the year we're not out as much, maybe, so that's how we miss things. But yeah, you should always check if you've got any kind of pile of wood, because they could be underneath it. Now, they do tend to go somewhere nice and dry for the winter, but they can shelter in under piles of wood and leaves and stuff as well. So they should always check beforehand.
Very good. Okay, so that's something to kind of bear in mind then if you are tidying up the garden and doing anything like that. Now, it's a new year, January, named after the god Janus, I believe, who was the god of doors and openings, renewals and change. And coming up on the show this year, we have a few kind of changes that we'll be applying to the show. So we'll be talking a little bit more about the small holding kind of lifestyle as well.
Yeah.
A feature that we'll try and get in every week, and some jobs that need doing around the place and the various animals that...
Is this just to remind me about my jobs?
No, it'll remind me as well. I think it's great when I'm preparing for the show every week and I'm kind of writing down the list of jobs to do in the garden. I just copy it then onto a piece of paper for Saturday when I go into the garden.
Yeah, and you can do them. Yeah, yeah. It is, isn't it?
So instead of being a bit more or a bit lax about kind of the jobs that I would do with the animals, we might just talk a little bit about what goes on there and keeping animals on the kind of smallholder side of things. And we're also going to be visiting some gardens to be talking to people about, because visiting gardens, that's one of my favourite things to do.
Yeah, mine too. And there's great gardens within like really easy access of Kilkenny. So we will over the course of the year. I think it'd be nice if we did one a month.
That would be nice. And it's always good when you go to anybody's garden, big, small, like a public garden or a private garden. I think you always learn something. So there's always some kind of idea that you can take home with you. And if you're any kind of gardener at all, you might notice something that you do a little bit better than was done there. Yeah. So it gives you a bit of a clap on the back as well.
But also I think it's inspiring, because you think if somebody else can do it, well, so can I. Or you learn you need a bit more colour, or you need a bit less of something or whatever. So yeah, I love visiting gardens. Sometimes I do, though, think if I actually spend 3 hours in my own garden doing some work, I might have a lovely garden instead of wandering around somebody else's admiring it.
Well, it doesn't have to be every week that we go on the visits, but it would be nice to do. And maybe one nice path to kind of follow would be, at least for the start of the year anyway, would be to follow the flowers as they come into bloom around Kilkenny. So there are some flowers, or some months are kind of closely associated with a certain type of flower. And we're spoiled for choice in Kilkenny, we really are. So January, for example, there's the gorse is coming in now and the bees will love that. That'll be the first kind of fresh food for the bees. But there's also crocuses, little crocuses will be coming into flower. I absolutely love those. And Kilkenny Castle has a fabulous crocus display.
It does, amazing crocuses on the front garden, just a couple of miles away. Well, not even a few miles away, a mile away.
Yeah. So they're not in just yet, but over the next couple of weeks they'll start to flower, and we might take a visit down there and have a look at those, and we'll tell people when they're at their best. Certainly something worth visiting. And then around the end of this month, my snowdrops start to come in, and February is really the month for snowdrops. And there's another garden not too far away,
Altamont.
Yeah, that's right.
That is,
and they're famous for their snowdrops.
I've actually never been there.
Really?
Sad to say, yes.
Well, they have a festival celebrating the snowdrop coming up from the 12th to the 18th of February. So we'll try and make a visit down there for that.
Okay, perfect.
And then in March, of course, it's bluebell season.
Well, we don't have to go very far for bluebells.
We don't.
There's a great selection of bluebells in Kilkenny.
There really is. And out in Jenkinstown, they kind of pride themselves on it. So we might take a visit out to Jenkinstown.
Dysart near Thomastown has amazing bluebells too.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So we take a walk along the river out there and maybe pick a path for people to follow and have a look at those. Fantastic. And there's an awful lot of wild garlic out there as well.
A huge amount of wild garlic, which kind of comes in middle of March, really, only for about 4 or 6 weeks. And also wood anemones. So there's an area, there's an area of bluebells, I suppose, but then there's a huge area on a slope of wood anemone, and it's just like a carpet of beautiful, their little delicate white flower. And that's just beautiful. I have to say, if you were ever in bad form, you couldn't come out of there in bad form, because they're beautiful and they're very delicate and perfect looking.
Gorgeous. That sounds lovely. And actually, what a lovely way to kind of lead into the little chat about the almanac that I hope to have with Leah Leendertz. We might take an ad break, and then we'll give Leah a call. She's over in the UK, and we'll talk to her about this gorgeous little book, which is a seasonal guide to 2018, which actually does a much better version of what we've just been talking about, where it's not just talking about flowers, but lots of other stuff.
Maybe she was inspired by the show.
We'll take a little break, and we'll hopefully have Leah on the line as soon as we get back from these. Text us on 086 353-7782. Call us now on 056-7762-777. And you're very welcome back to the show. I'm Francis Nesbitt. I'm here with Mags Morrissey. You're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden. You can get in touch. Don't forget, you can get in touch by text to 086-353-7782 or by phone on 776-2777. If you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, please don't text the show, as we won't get your message, but you can still email us on thekitchengarden@crkc.ie. Leah, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Hello, Francis.
Thank you very much for joining us on the show, Leah.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent. And Leah, I have to tell you, first of all, I'm a huge fan of your book, The Almanac, A Seasonal Guide to 2018.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It really is lovely. And India Knight, who I'm also a big fan of, I see on the front, she says, the perfect companion to the seasons.
Yes, isn't that lovely? Very pleased to get India Knight.
Lovely quote, it really is. So when I came across your book, it was actually a gift I got for Christmas, and I was thinking, this is a perfect kind of companion to exactly what we do here on the show, which is talk to people about seasonal food and how to grow it. We'll be referencing your book throughout the year. I hope you don't mind.
Wonderful. No, I would love that very much. Thank you.
You might tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write the book, Leah.
Sure. Well, it came originally from a holiday by the sea, actually. And I was staying in this lovely, that little tiny place in Cornwall, where you can get a sort of little shack, really, in the dunes. And we had a view of out across St. Ives Bay, across the Sandflat. So we could see the tide going out and the tide coming in, and then the sun setting across St. Ives Point, and then the moon rising out of the sea. And it felt like, wow, all this sort of huge cosmic stuff is going on in front of me here. And I kind of really wanted to hang on to it, to find a way to sort of take that stuff home, because I live in Bristol, it's a city, I can look out the window at, you know, a nice enough view of gardens and houses, and but you know, no grand cosmic sort of thing going on before me. So it was kind of looking at a way of bringing that stuff home with me. And also I thought, well, it fits quite nicely, the idea of an almanac, in with the sort of books I love, which is those sort of kitchen garden books that take you through the year, so telling you, you know, what's seasonal now and what to eat now. And I thought, well, actually, that's a really nice combination of things and a way of kind of making the most of each month, really. That's sort of what it's turned into, is, you know, how to celebrate each month in all the different ways. So everything that's going on, you know, in the skies, but also much closer down in the earth near us, in the, you know, the nature, in the kitchen, and all of those things.
Well, you've done a fantastic job. I have to say, I'm a really big fan. And I've been trying not to get too far ahead because I don't really want to spoil the surprise for myself. But I've had a look through January already. And even at this time of the year when everything seems so dormant, there's plenty for us to kind of see outside and things to do. And just turning to page 11, planting an apple tree, and there you describe beautifully the kind of rootstocks that people need to consider and the size of the tree that it will eventually grow. And you talk a little bit as well about planting by the moon.
I do. I mean, it's funny, actually, because I don't know if you know, but I raised the money to make the book by a crowdfunding with Unbound. When I put forward the idea, you know, so people have bought the book individually well ahead of publication date. And because I had this sort of huge group of people that were kind of funding the publication of the book, creating it, lots of people kept saying to me, really looking forward to getting the planting by the moon dates. And when I looked back, I thought, I haven't mentioned it, have I not? And I hadn't. All the way through all of the stuff I did to try and drum up support for the book, I never mentioned it, and yet it was clearly something that people wanted. And I thought, yeah, why not? You know? So I think it's just nice because it's something that people are aware of, they're interested in, they maybe want to try out, and I'm not making any great claim for it necessarily, although, you know, there's lots of good arguments for it, but, you know, the dates are just there. You know, if you want to use them, there they are.
Well, I'm going to try and reference them in the garden this year. Biodynamic gardening is something that I've been reading about and thinking about for the last few years and just never got around to it.
Yeah.
And so
I think that's the case for a lot of people. So putting it very sort of plainly for them might make it a little easier to try.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like, you've got a little kind of list of jobs to do in the garden there, and the month is broken down into kind of four periods and things to do with, you know, when to harvest and what type of crops to plant, depending on what the moon is doing. So we'll be using that as a guide as well, I think, and we might mention that a couple of times. did you come across a favourite little nugget as you were researching the book? Is there anything in there for you that you loved learning about?
Oh, gosh, I mean, so much. What was funny was that, you know, I'm a garden writer and a food writer. I write about those things, so I'm fairly confident ground there. But there's an awful lot in the book that was kind of new to me, and or, you know, I had an interest in, but I'm certainly not an expert. And that, there were these moments where I could sort of feel my brain growing in new directions as I tried to get my head around, you know, the way that Peregrine tides work and, you know, the different things going on with the constellations and all that. And it was really, you know, I think perhaps that sort of stuff, you know, the cosmos stuff I don't know so much about, you know, normally was most satisfying. I really love knowing and being much more aware of moon phases and things like that than I was before, of when the tides are going to be particularly high, as they are kind of right now. Actually, we've got particularly high tides at the moment because of the supermoon and all of the effects of that carry on sort of for a couple of days afterwards. So I really like that stuff, I think, to be in contact with that. Even if I'm not by the sea myself, I know that that's going on.
You're not too far from the sea, though, in Bristol, and beautiful countryside in Wales, not far from you, and down and down south as well, a part of the UK that I'm very familiar with, and I've been over many times, Dorset and Devon and so on. They're
lovely.
Not very far from you. Beautiful part of the world.
Yes, well, I had a picture today sent through to me from someone on Charmouth Beach, saying she'd gone down and to see the particularly low spring tide, and she was saying that the rocks are much further down, much more visible today than they are normally, because it's been this big, particularly high, particularly low tide that you get during a spring tide, during a particularly big one, as it has been today and yesterday.
One of the things that I hope people take away, I run some small holding courses and some foraging courses here, and one of the things I hope people take away from those courses is not everything that we've covered. So I don't want them to remember every single thing, but I just want them to be able, I just want them to look a little bit more and maybe, you know, set themselves a kind of a mission of learning maybe one new thing a month or even a couple of new things each time they do the course, but mostly just to look. And I think having anybody flick through your book, it would just inspire a little bit of curiosity about what's going on above us, what's going on the beaches, what's going on in the countryside, and would inspire a bit more kind of thought about seasonality. So I have to say, really, job brilliantly done.
Well, I hope so. I mean, one of the things that I wanted it to do was to provide kind of a window into seasonality, kind of no matter what your abilities are. So, you know, even if you can't go out on big treks around the coastline, you know, you can buy some seasonal vegetables and you can cook with them, or you know, you can do that, you can step outside and look for the constellations that look particularly good this month. So I hope that it's kind of got something that sort of works for everybody, little ways in to kind of finding more out about the month, or even just reading it and sensing, you know, being aware of the festivities of the month and of what's happening, you know, what other people are doing and all of that. I hope that that will sort of just give lots of people different ways in. It's not sort of prescriptive about how you should be doing things. It just sort of provides the tools, really, for different people to celebrate the month in their own ways.
Well, I think India Knight said it very well when she said that it's the perfect companion to the seasons. And Leah, we highly recommend it here on the show. So that's the Almanac, A Seasonal Guide to 2018 by Leah Lean-Dertz. And it is available in the book centre here in Kilkenny. I checked before we came into the show, so I strongly recommend that. Leah, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely.
Okay, and we'll be back just after these. Text us on 086-353-7782. Call us now on 056-7762-777. And you're very welcome back to The Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm here with Mags Morrissey as always. Thank you very much to those who've contacted the show. A couple of texts in just commenting, Leah, on the book as well. So obviously it was a popular stocking filler at Christmas and it really is a gorgeous book. We're here live today, Friday from 4 to 5, and you can send in any questions or comments you have by text to 086-353-7782 or by phone on 776-2777. If you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, we hope you're enjoying it, but please don't text the show as we won't get to see your message. You can still email us though on thekitchengarden@corkc.ie. Mags, we have a guest in the studio with us today.
Yes.
A friend of yours all the way down from Dublin. Yes. Sian Quill, you're very, very welcome.
Thank you, Francis. Thanks.
I'm actually very excited that she's here.
I'm excited to be here.
Just move into that microphone bit there, Sian, so we can all hear. So, Sian, you're working up in Dublin. You're a script writer, would that be right?
That's right. I'm a freelance script writer. So I'm a script writer with Fair City on RTE. And I also script write for some children's television as well. So, yeah, it's a great job. I have to say, I'm really lucky because I love it.
Brilliant.
It's great fun. It's a really popular show. My mum is a huge fan of Fair City, so she lets me know of her. All my family are down in Wicklow, so she's quite a gang down in Wicklow there who fill me in on the stories they love and everything. And it's a great bunch of writers. There's about over 30 of us, so we're all freelance.
Really?
Yeah. And then we'd have story writers and we have script writers. So I'm a script writer. So then we'd get a call and I would do write a script, which is just under half an hour, like 26 minutes. And we would have, so the story writers have written all the stories and then they'd be handed on to us and then we'd have a script editor and then we go ahead and, well, basically we're writing the dialogue for all the characters. Yeah, it's a great job. I'm really lucky. Yeah.
And it's a very, very popular show. An awful lot of people love their Fair City and get very invested in it and the characters and the various storylines and so on.
They really do. I mean, it's 2 hours of drama a week, you know. It goes out 4 times a week. We have an omnibus now. I mean, it's hilarious down on Christmas Day because my mum, like, there's no way, and actually my sister's mother-in-law, there's no way that the Christmas dinner can interrupt the Fair City hour special. So it's right, what time is dinner and what time is the Fair City Christmas special? So it's a very important, and I, you know, we're not the only household. You know, it's a big part of particularly like old soaps. Of course, Christmas is a really special one, but it's a big part of Irish culture, I suppose, all across Ireland. You know,
and do you get pestered the whole time by the family telling us what, you know, tell me what's coming up next and what happens to him and what happens
hilarious.
To her?
Hilarious, and I say nothing because of course we can say nothing. So I just go, I'm sorry, I'd have to kill you now before I tell you that. I'm sorry if I told you. No, stop asking. No. And it's so funny because Mum asked me something recently about what was happening, and I said, no, I can't tell you. And she said, well, hang on now, that was only on the other night. I was still not allowing her I was still protecting myself from telling her something she already knew. I just go, listen, I know more than that, for goodness sake. So we'd all be very careful as scriptwriters not to say a word.
But I suppose it'd be easy to trip yourself up, you know.
That's
forgetting what went
say
out
nothing.
Say nothing,
because we're reading so far ahead and we're working so far ahead. So when someone asks, I just clam up and go, no, I'd have to kill you if I told you that, sorry, I'm saying nothing. Because your head is full of the story, the script you're working on, and we go through many, many drafts. Each script would go through many drafts. So you'd be working on a script, then you're reading ahead of scripts, then you might be doing, you know, they're all at different stages at different times. So yeah, I just say nothing. Watch the show. That's it.
That's fantastic. And are there any vegetarians on the show?
Oh God, what a good question. Let me see. We've had some very, well, funny, do you know what I was thinking of was, because, and here I am in Kilkenny, we have Tommy Dillon, who's sort of one of the ladies' men, definitely not a vegetarian, but he's from Kilkenny,
right.
And he's been involved in the farmer's market, so we have that sort of link. And then we have, I'm just thinking, Carrie Ann, she's been on her health kick recently, so I think I'm thinking of a script recently with the whole hummus eating and everything,
yes.
You know, very healthy or whatever. So I mean, the thing is, we'd have a lot of the characters going in and out to the local shop, so you'd be see them buying things, but of course having an actual meal is quite a big deal in soap opera land, because you've got actors, you're thinking of the takes, the number of takes that they would shoot the scene, so you'd have food sitting there or going cold, you'd have actors trying to speak while they're eating and so on. So often they've just eaten, or the actors are just about to eat, because it's sort of easier that way, because it's very hard, especially if it's an emotional or a romantic scene and they've just eaten a bit of cabbage and spud. It's very hard to, so often it should be that, you know, it should be. And of course we have our Hungry Pig diner, so that probably, there's a lot of burgers going on in the area.
That's not very vegetarian, no.
No.
Well, any time I've ever tuned in, there is kind of meaningful looks across the aisles in the local shop, or they're in the coffee shop, or they're in the pub. Very Irish kind of scenes for
very
interaction.
Irish scenes. And actually, TV drama, God, the Irish, English, American, there's always a lot of coffee, isn't there? Like, there's always a lot of the tea and coffee, because you have people moving fast. So you have the sitting down characters, but you need people to move in and out of the coffee shops and in and out of. So there's all, everyone's going around with their takeaway cups, as is indeed very real.
It is, but I know it's set in Dublin, but that kind of local community feel, I think we're close to where I am out in Thomastown, it matches it perfectly, because you could go into Paddy's shop and you never know who you're going to meet out there.
Yeah.
And then you go into one of the cafes and you sit down with one person and three others wander through. Now, maybe there isn't the same sense of drama.
Hopefully there's nobody locked in a room out there
for years.
That we know about.
That's true. I think that's the beauty of Fair City and drama, like, is it's about community, and you're absolutely right. So a local town, or in fact the smaller the town and the village, the more sense of community, because people are knowing each other, or they know someone through someone or whatever, but of course it's all heightened, and that's the nature of drama, that there's conflict and there's sort of heightened relationships, and everyone knows everyone, everything about everyone.
And is there a sense of competition then among you writers about, you know, who can take it kind of to the next level, or who can introduce a brand new concept, or, you know, push
it a little. Very much the show. So okay. We work, yeah, it's all work as a team.
Okay.
So you have your story team, you have your script writers, but even say you'd be writing a script, but you're one of four of that week. So it's all about the team, because at the end of the day, it's not about an individual writer's voice, it's about the show, it's about Fair City, the show, and that working. So we're fitting in around that, and each character as well has their voice. So that's why we have script editors and producers and like everybody who's looking to make sure that all the scripts sort of gel, you know, because it's the story of the of Carrickstown and the characters that we're telling. No, we're a great big happy family.
So nobody's looking at the UK soaps and going, oh, we could do that. Or actually, the next person.
I think we're very different. Yeah. I think we're great storytellers here. I mean, EastEnders is fab. I must say, I'm really proud of what we do here on Fair City. I think we tell stories really well, and just in a slightly different way. I don't think so actually.
And what about the touching on kind of topical issues then? So is there? Is that part of the remit, or is it something you kind of have to stand clear of in case of repeats or whatever?
Well, yeah. I mean, I suppose when you're coming up with story ideas, what is going on in the... And we'd be constantly sort of pitching ideas for this character, that character, whatever. So, you know, there's so much going on in the news all around us. It'd be hard for ideas that's, you know, things that are going on around us not to, to influence our story ideas in a way. But at the same time, it's not issue-led. It's character-led. I think our soap is very much about character and community, as you said, and it's that. And yes, if there's some issue that can be sort of... But it's woven in, hopefully, in a subtle way rather than... Because if you're sort of hitting people over the head with, this is our issue here, you know, it's not as interesting. But if it's character-driven and that character would really react that way and this situation would happen to them... Then it's great. That's when it really works. Yeah.
That's very Irish, because the Irish love to know who you are, and they love to have a connection with the character. So it's the person they more connect with, I think. And if you go to Donegal, for example, the question that you're asked is, "Whose are you?" You know. So it's not who are you; it's what connection do you have to the place or what you're doing there. So I can understand why
your tribe, your connection, story.
Yes. Absolutely. So I can understand why that would be the real focus. There's no chef. Or there's no gardener there. Opening, maybe.
We always have, I suppose we always have, well, Dean is our chef. Leo Dowling's son is a chef. Again, do we see them actually cooking the food on screen? No, that would be quite tricky. As I say, we have Tommy, who's sometimes running around with his box of vegetables. But I suppose food is just a tricky one, as you say, to show. But yes, always an opening.
Get them onto the allotment in Carrickstown.
Well, we've the older characters. Yeah. We did have some of the, you know, the lovely Eamon Morris, who plays Cass, and some of the older characters, and Charlie and Bell and actually that's a lovely story because it's very real as well. And it's lovely in the city because it is Dublin for the lads to have their, which is of course the allotment, while it's lovely to grow the vegetables, it's also about a place to go. You know, a place to be and the men to be. And we got some lovely stories.
And an excellent backdrop for them to kind of have the conversations with each other. And
it's a different environment than the coffee shop, as you're saying, to actually have someone digging, you know.
And these things happen, you know. That's when people do kind of have chats in allotments. You know, we talk to an awful lot of a lot of people listen to the show who are allotmenteers. And part of the community is what really attracts them. So they might live in a big city, but their closest friends are actually people working on the little plot next door to them, you know, and they come from different parts of the city, you know.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's that human connection. Now, one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you, as well as the fascinating stuff about the goings-on in Carrickstown, is you're a vegetarian.
I am. Well, the truth is, Francis and Mags, I'm actually a pescatarian.
Ah.
But I just think it sounds far too fancy and a bit posh. So I just say I'm a vegetarian, but I do occasionally eat fish. Right. Pescatarian is no meat at all, but fish and vegetables. And so I call myself a vegetarian, but I do eat very little fish. But because I do, I suppose I wouldn't be allowed in the very strict vegetarian group. But I mean, I was like all of us, I suppose, growing up in an Irish family. You know, we had meat, veg and potatoes every day. But even as a kid, I never liked the taste or texture of meat. I just never did. It felt wrong. I didn't like it. Chicken I could do. super Quinn sausages as they were then. I loved. But anything that looked like, so anything like a chop or a steak or anything that looked like animal, I used to just pour tomato ketchup on and pour mint sauce on, even if it wasn't lamb, because it was, and I couldn't bear the thought of eating a little lamb. And that was when I was quite young. So then the moment I sort of went to college, I realised, I remember actually a cafe around the college I was in having falafel, and I had no idea what that was. I didn't know what, and I remember trying it and realising it wasn't meat, and it just tasted so gorgeous, and there were salads. And I remember that moment in college, and what was I, 17, going, oh my goodness, there's an alternative. I can make a choice. I'm an adult now, do you know? And yeah, no, I haven't eaten red meat since then. I continued a little bit of white meat maybe into my 20s, and then I stopped that as well. Yeah.
It's very, very topical at the moment. And one of the reasons why I wanted to talk a little bit about it in January is there's vegetarian January is something that is kind of being pushed, where people are, it's suggested, maybe they give up meat for the month and see how they get on with it. There's also Veganuary. Have you heard of that?
Oh, Veganuary. No, I haven't.
Veganuary. It's a charity inspiring people to try vegan, the vegan lifestyle for January, and maybe sample it throughout the rest of the year. Of course, Meat for Monday is something that Paul McCartney has kind of been pushing for a while.
That's right.
But at this time of the year, as people are considering New Year's resolutions or changes or even just a kind of cleansing diet.
I think that's the sort of winter cleansing, yeah, of letting me just maybe to give it a try. It's funny you mentioned Paul McCartney, because I'm not a vegan. I know a vegan, all right, and it is very, I could personally couldn't give up the dairy products because I love them. Not eating meat, I love dairy, but you know, vegan, there's that whole issue of leather as well. And you have things like, you know, leather handbags and shoes, and probably it's the hardest thing to find, that sort of, you know, man-made. But I do, my one designer thing in my life, and maybe it'll be the only thing, is my Stella McCartney handbag, and I absolutely love it.
What is it made from?
It's Stella McCartney. I just love it. I don't have it with me, or I would show you, but it is red, it's beautiful, and it feels soft like leather. But I don't know, actually, now that you ask, Mags, I don't know what material it is.
Okay, it's synthetic. It's something
synthetic. And I would now, like, I would never, although I'm not vegan, but I would never wear a leather jacket. I don't have a leather bag. I suppose leather shoes is probably the only thing that, you know, I haven't really looked into. But, I mean, having said that, I do cook meat for my children because they're children, and I do think they can make their own choices, you know, when they grow up. Now, my son, as Max knows, doesn't eat that much anyway. He's a great Weetabix man. My daughter's
suitable for vegetarians.
Toast and Marmite is another favourite.
Toast and Marmite, the classic.
Suitable for vegetarians too.
Yes, a lot of people think Marmite isn't, but it is, and it's full of the B vitamins, yeah, which is, of course, as well, what you can be lacking if you're not eating meat. So actually, Marmite is a great one for that. But I will cook chicken for them. Now, I have never cooked them a steak. I've never cooked them a chop. In fact, a friend of ours, they were in her house, Jill, and she had made for the kids, she'd done them all a chop, and she put them on their plates, and Mike went, "Thanks, Jill. What is it?" I was like, "Oh my God." But I would cook bolognese for them. I would cook chicken for them. And I would do some fish. Yeah, yeah. So, and then obviously they can make, but I have no problem with anyone, you know, eating meat in front of me or anything like that. That's all fine. Although my still thinks that I'm, although she knows I'm a vegetarian who eats fish, so she finds hard to get her head around that, but she still thinks that I must eat chicken because that's white, so that's not really meat anyway.
But I've always thought that somebody who makes the decision, either on ethical grounds or because they simply don't like the taste of meat, they have to think a little bit more about what they're eating then. It's not as easy being a vegetarian or a vegan or whatever, because you have to think about the balance in your diet.
You do? Yeah,
I could feed the pigs, for example. My pigs are all vegetarians. Yeah. But I could feed them barley all day and they would happily eat it, and then 6 weeks later they'd die from lack of nutrition. essentially, even though their belly was full, you know, so because they're not getting a balance of the vitamins and minerals and stuff that they need. So I presume that's something you have to consider.
Well, I was joking about the Marmot, but actually, I'm serious. Yeah, you're absolutely right. The vitamin Bs, an awful lot of us who don't eat meat will be lacking in those. And there is, I would eat a lot of nuts now. I mean, I would eat a lot of dairy, but I would eat a lot of nuts as well, just to balance that. And I mean, I love lentils, and so I would cook a lot with that. I mean, really, yeah, like a lentil dal. And then my daughter, she would eat that as well. And she would actually, although she loves her meat, she would eat the dal with me. And then I'd have to do something different with my son. But yeah, I suppose you do. I don't think about it too much. Like, I don't think it's too big a deal, but I would like to be relatively, and I would take a multivitamin. I think, I hope I would be relatively healthy. I have a good friend of mine from school days, and she actually is always giving me grief because she's a scientist. She looks at things very practically.
And I like the sound of her.
Yes, she's very, it's fine and everything, but her big thing was, the kids need their meat. And I said, no, I get that. But she said, no, but I know you do the bolognese for them and you do the chicken for them. But she was saying to me, I really think one day a week they need something full of iron, like a red meat one day a week while they're growing. Now, I hadn't thought of that.
Right.
So I am trying to do that now. And, you know, and she's probably right. And then she said, and because I'm not going to eat that, she says, you need to look into something that's full of iron for you as well.
Green leafy veg.
Yes, and good, I'm probably not great on
and a lot of kids are not big into spinach and cabbage and that, so it is something that, and my children are not, but they got enough in meat, so I think they're okay.
They get yours in meat. I'd have to sort of disguise mine with the magic blender, maybe, to get in some. Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that funny? So we could have meat-free Monday for meat eaters, and then we could have Meaty Monday for the families of vegetarians.
That's such a good idea.
There's something in
that. That's going to catch on.
I do think, though, environmentally, we actually probably all need to probably eat a little bit less meat and maybe higher welfare, better reared meat.
It is a message that we kind of talk about on the show quite a bit. So it would be better if we spent a little bit more money on the meat that we're buying, and, you know, consider the welfare of the animal before it dies and the life it had while it was around with us. So maybe eat a little bit less of it, spend a little bit more on it.
Well, it was Mags actually who said that to me, because I don't know about meat. Mm. I would only buy free range chicken now, and that's because of Mags, because I've been, you know, because I've met your hens, and but I would be very conscious, and because I again don't know about any red meat, so now that I'm starting to do maybe a little bit for them, I will only buy good stuff, because also when I cook it I can't taste it. Which is sort of odd, you know. I call my daughter in to go, is that bolognese nice? Is that different from the last one? Or is that chicken? You know, I realise I don't taste their food if it's meat-based, which is sort of an odd one, you know.
Well, it's common. I'm sure there's a lot of households like that. You know, people waiting for their kids to make the decision themselves. But there's varying degrees then of kind of militancy about the vegetarian movement or lifestyle or whatever. So there are people who just live it themselves by choice. But there are very strong advocates for it too. And it's very, very topical at the moment. I heard in the news that the Oxford Union last night, for example, had a debate at which they were proposing that this house adopt that we'll stop eating meat by 2100, and caused quite a bit of controversy. And particularly in the UK, it's a movement which is taking taking on some legs.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
By 2100. Oh, my goodness. I'm one of those very relaxed people about it, so I wouldn't even think I'm part of anything or not. I do find it's much easier now than when I was in my 20s, because now you can say, if you're going out for dinner, I mean, before it was, your option was pasta. You know, or there was, I mean, I have to say the one vegetable I'm probably not mad about is aubergine, because there was that thing of everything was an aubergine. It was an aubergine and that was it. And there'd be sort of a lot of red sauce on it, and that was your option, or else it was pasta. And you sort of think, well, when you have kids, you actually cook so much pasta at home. So when I go out, I don't want more pasta. But now there's such a range. I feel spoiled for choice. You know, actually, my cousin, my fancy cousin, my first time ever in a Michelin star restaurant, he had a 60th birthday birthday party, and we all went to Michelin star, my first, hopefully not my last, but my first. And the one thing I said to him was, and you know the way in a Michelin star, well, my first time, so I didn't know, but they literally, there's no menu or anything, they just come out with all these loads and loads of courses. And all I said to him was, you know I'm a vegetarian. He said, of course, no, I remember. So we were all sitting at different times, and they were coming out with all these courses, and I was so happy to be a veggie. I hadn't even said I eat a bit of fish. I just said, no, I'm a vegetarian, because in fact, the other meat eaters at my table were all looking over into my very interesting, beautiful and colourful plate each time, going, that looks so nice. And then they go, what's this sort of squidgy green thing under ours? What is that? Did you hear what she said? And it was just very funny, because mine was just delightful. And I actually got a cauliflower course. I mean, I don't even particularly like cauliflower. And it was cauliflower done three different ways. Oh, and wow. It was delicious.
But yeah, I think if anything is cooked properly, actually, it can be really nice. And we've, you know, sometimes maybe cauliflower would have been so overcooked in the past, and that we'd have sort of a bad experience that would put us off for the rest of our lives or something. So cauliflower can be nice, can't it?
Yeah, everything. I couldn't believe it. It was so funny. It was like veggie jealousy going on. It's like, yours looks so lovely. So, there, you know, there's so many interesting options now with vegetables. You know, it's not just your bowl of pasta and pesto, or the aubergine.
Well, I know all the chefs that I know would take it very seriously now, and you know they know that if they want to get people through the doors, that in a mixed group, there's bound to be one vegetarian maybe, or a vegan. So it's something, it's skills that they have to develop, because if you say no to one of them, or if you give them a bad meal, then you might lose six or eight people, and they're not coming back the next time. So
it's true, and it's a bit of a challenge too, isn't it? I think as a chef, you're going, okay, what can I do that's interesting and a little bit different? So this person goes away and goes, that. It's the nicest veggie meal, because that's a lovely compliment for a chef too. You know, someone's done something a little bit inspiring. Yeah,
we're spoiled as well in Kilkenny. There's a friend of ours has who's a chef and a vegetarian, and only cooks vegetable in the Cutting Veg.
Cutting Veg, Helen.
Yeah, Helen Costello. That's right.
Yeah,
just on Ormond Street, isn't it?
Ormond Street. Yeah. A really nice little spot.
Gorgeous little shop. Lovely little deli, and
she's very dedicated to her vegetables and doing nice things with them. So yeah, it's a lovely place. And she does kind of, you know, she does lunch and she'll have, you know, soup and then kind of very hearty, warming type veggie dishes, kind of Indian influences sometimes. And she also does cakes, and she'll do vegan cakes and some very nice things. And she's very nice.
Yeah. I have to check that out.
You will,
It's a lovely, lovely little shop in town. And there's a lot of chefs that kind of like, not just her, but a lot of other chefs as well that produce a fantastic vegetarian food around town. But the Cutting Veg is well worth a visit.
Thanks. And you mentioned Indian. I'm just thinking, because Indian food, I have to say, is the one that all of us love. You know, the spices and everything, such a mix. There's such a delight for veggies, I think, with Indian.
Thanks very much for coming in to talk to us, Shan.
You're so welcome. It's lovely to be
That's
here.
That's fantastic. Fantastic.
We don't have time for her her ad when she's featured in the Move Over Butter ad, do we?
Oh, do tell us all about that.
That is such a brilliant story. If anyone remembers this, well, no, I'll let Shan do it. She tells it much better than me.
It was 15 years ago. I was an actress before I was a writer, and every actor looks for the, well, there's probably one ad that you get that is worth a few bob. Anyway, mine was the Move Over Butter. I played the crazy Mrs. Bird, and I lured a politician into a big high beehive of a hairstyle and funky mad colours, and I was a bit crazy, and I lured a politician in with butter into a cage and locked him up, and it turned out that I'd actually locked up quite a number of politicians in the back. Yes, it was very sweet.
Wait a minute, that sounds a little kind of similar to a storyline that's been running for a long time in Fair City. No, was that
good one, Francis.
Should that not get credited?
I've gone looking for that ad.
I'd love to show my kids.
Yeah.
Because they just don't believe me.
I have a memory of it. Do you have a memory of it?
I do. Yeah. I'm sure it must be available.
I would
somewhere. So
love to find it. If anyone out there has a copy of The Move Over Butter with Crazy Mrs. Bird, and the other actor was the fabulous Des Nealon, and I locked him up. And it's so funny because a good friend of mine from Roscommon, her mummy, bless her, hi Lily, she still buys Move Over Butter because she thinks that every tub that she buys that I'll get some money. Sad. sadly, this is not the case.
Oh, no. Well, fair play to her for her loyalty. And we have to say, your acting obviously worked if it has a long-term customer like that still going. Well, I'm afraid we're all out of time now in the Kitchen Garden this week. Sian Quill, thank you very much again for joining us. Fantastic listening to how it's all done on Fair City. And thanks very much for talking to us about vegetarianism as well. Mags, anything that we've to do for the week ahead before we finish up? We're virtually out of time.
Use up Swedes. Lots of Swedes in the garden. Yeah, really nice veg. You could roast them, boil them, mash them with potatoes and carrots. Add a little bit of butter, or a lot of butter, and a little bit of nutmeg. There is a very nice roasted, kind of a roasted, they're not actually root vegetables, but they're kind of swollen stem, but that's not really relevant to the kitchen.
I didn't know that. I thought they were a root veg.
No, they're different to turnip, actually. So yeah, they are different.
They would have been a huge part of my diet now when I was growing up, the Swede
or turnip.
Well, it was always called turnip, but I'm pretty sure they were Swedes.
Yeah, turnips were brought into Ireland to feed animals, so they kind of had a poor association for us eating them for a very long time, until kind of in famine times people ate them, and apparently in some parts of the country people actually turned a little shade of yellow from eating so much turnip because that's all they were having for a while.
Oh my God!
Maybe it kept them alive. I'm not sure, but so Swedes are different. They're kind of a smaller. They never grow like a turnip will grow quite big and stuff. They'll never grow that big, and there's a lot of different varieties, kind of white ones and everything. But you can do a nice roast. I've done roast with with beetroot, parsnip, some Swedes, some potato, good sprig of thyme, very nice. Somebody actually told me, a friend from college, that he eats his turnips when they're really young, the size of a golf ball. He just peels them and eats them like an apple.
Really?
And they're apparently really sweet, or grates them into a salad at that stage. Not later, obviously, but at that stage. I've never done it. I will try it this year. But yeah, interesting,
isn't
it?
A great way of using up your thinnings when you're...
Exactly, yeah. Throwing them to the pigs or something.
There's a whole generation of people who grew up in the country, and if you were to say thinning turnips to them, they just kind of start to twitch because it was the job they had when they were a kid out in the fields, and it sounds like it was absolutely backbreaking. But when you're doing it on a smaller scale in the garden, it is something you still need to do. So you need to thin them. Yeah. So that's something
to
bear in mind.
Or dice them really smallly and scatter them into a salad. They're small.
That sounds lovely. I tell you, I did have Van Morrison's New Year, Celtic New Year, lined up to finish out the show today because I thought it would be appropriate. I've just clicked eject on that now because we've run out of time for that. So we've another 1 minute to talk about other jobs to do. Is there something else that we need to bear in mind? You were talking about feeding the birds.
Oh, yes. Sorry, if you want to make marmalade, now's the time. The Seville oranges are just coming in. And there's a 4-week kind of opportunity if anybody fancies making marmalade. It's a bit of a job, actually. I've never done it. I did go looking at it, but it's an overnight job. So, I know lots of people, every single year they get their oranges and they'll make a few pots of marmalade, but this is the time of year to do that. Feed the birds, keep feeding the birds, always feed the birds.
Well, I know, just as you were talking about the Marmite and whether it's a love or hate kind of thing, marmalade is similar, isn't it? Really, some people love marmalade. I've never liked it. I can't stand marmalade.
Shan
is sticking her thumb down there as well, even as a vegetarian.
I'm shaking my head at the two of you. I love it.
I can't understand marmalade or people who eat it.
I'm the same. Oh, I feel so lonely. No, I still like it.
So it's a big job to make it.
Yeah, it's an overnight job and stuff. You've got to squeeze your oranges.